Take the case under advisement. Our fourth case for this morning is Christina Jones against Craig Clark. Mr. Koenig.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, before I get into my prepared notes, I'd like to bring to the attention of the Court a case I discovered yesterday while preparing for argument today. It's an opinion of the Illinois Appellate Court, 2nd District, People v. Munoz. It's 2nd District docket number 2-08-0996. And it's a decision construing Illinois' obstruction statute, section 31-1. And what we maintain the case holds is that words alone can amount to obstruction of justice, and that the physical act that the courts in Illinois have backed off the requirement that there be a physical act. And in that case, what the court held was that a complaint that charged a defendant with simply telling a witness to a shooting not to answer any questions was sufficient to constitute the charge of obstruction of justice under 31-1 under Illinois law.
But Mr. Koenig, Munoz, yes or no? My problem with this appeal is really the question of appellate jurisdiction, because if we take the facts in the light most favorable to Ms. Jones, there really is no issue here at all. She volunteered to go get her driver's license from her car. She showed her ID to the officers. She, you know, was courteous to everybody. You know, she was trying to contact her supervisor to ensure that the legitimacy of her meter reading for Commonwealth Edison could be verified by the officers. You never cite any Illinois statute that prohibits people from taking photographs of houses, and in fact, you'd put Google Maps out of business if there were such a statute. There is no underlying violation. Now, I'm saying these are the facts as she states them. I don't know what the trial is going to show, but under Johnson against Jones, this is the kind of case over which this court has no jurisdiction.
The trial court didn't identify any factual disputes. We are relying upon the plaintiff's version of the evidence. If Your Honor is simply saying...
Then you're saying she volunteered to get her driver's license, and if they really wanted her birth date, a simple glance at her driver's license would have furnished that.
First, Your Honor, the record doesn't support that. If you look at the particular page that the plaintiff's counsel cites, all that he mentioned, all that was mentioned was, my driver's license is in my car and where the car is.
And if we're going to take the inferences and the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff.
Yes, that's correct.
What law did these people think she was violating?
Well, first, Your Honor, I guess one question would be, under Terry, do we have the right to take the person from that area of the stop to their vehicle?
Correct. First of all, what law did your clients think she was violating?
At the time of the stop?
Right.
Terry v. Ohio. We thought she was casing the place.
Oh, please.
Wait. She was a person of color taking pictures with a binocular, reading, and she was identified as a ComEd employee. I just don't see why there's an interlocutory appeal here. I agree with Judge Wood.
Utility.
Does he have to try the case and maybe you have a chance to win? Maybe the facts are a little different, but based on these facts, my goodness.
Well,
the
facts that we had initially was that a construction worker was behaving suspiciously, taking pictures. We didn't know this was a Commonwealth Edison person. Those were initial facts.
Why is it unlawful for somebody to take pictures? You could have somebody walking through a neighborhood taking photographs for Google Maps. I don't know if you've ever gone on Google Maps, but you can get the street view, and you can rotate the camera around and see what the house looks like, and you can even figure out when was the last time they took a picture of your house, whether the leaves are out or whether, you know, the bird bath that you installed is there or not or whatever. I just don't understand what's illegal about walking through a neighborhood taking pictures.
Your Honor, to fail to recognize that crooks occasionally pose as utility workers to try and get into someone's home, as an example, to use a fake ID.
If I can take the facts in the light most favorable to your clients, she says she gets stopped by the police. There's a conversation, and I'm certainly willing to agree with you. The Fourth Amendment is not implicated by the police saying, hey, can we talk to you for a minute? She shows not one but two IDs. She's identified as a Commonwealth Edison worker. She tells them where her car is. She tells them where her driver's license is, according to you. I think according to one version of the facts, she volunteers to get it. She also says, I can contact my supervisor for you. She's trying to get on the phone to her supervisor. If you accept all of those facts, they have no right to detain her any further.
I would submit that under Heibel and under Illinois statute, if that initial detention is reasonable.
Which it's not.
Well, is Your Honor saying that we couldn't stop her in the first place?
You didn't, quote, stop her. You had a conversation with her.
Oh, Your Honor, I acknowledge that when we first stopped her, she was not free to go. And I acknowledge that...
Well, that's a wild acknowledgement, because now you really are pretty much conceding this was unreasonable.
No, Your Honor, under Terry,
There's no room for a Terry stop here.
Your Honor says this is not a Terry stop, or there's no room for one.
I'm saying that when the only thing you know is that somebody in broad daylight is walking through a neighborhood taking pictures of a house, you can certainly follow up on that and have a chat with the person, but as soon as the person properly identifies themselves, there's no reasonable suspicion that they're doing anything wrong.
She did not properly identify herself.
She did. She showed both of her Commonwealth Edison IDs, and she volunteered to get her driver's license. She told the police where her car was. She told the police her driver's license was there.
So we were supposed to walk from the scene to get her license from the car and let her leave the scene.
Take her with you if you want. But there's never any conversation about that. The police were determined to arrest her, it seems.
It's a long race
walking through a neighborhood in Braidwood.
Well, Your Honor, the race allegations have been thrown out by the trial judge. There was insufficient evidence to support any allegations of race-based stop.
Use some common sense. Well,
what's the racial composition of Braidwood?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What's the racial composition of Braidwood?
Predominantly white.
So, I mean, as I look at it, I just think it's so strange that if this would have been a white meter reader for a ComEd doing the exact same thing,
well,
there wouldn't have been any police call, there wouldn't have been any arrest or anything of that.
Well, again, Your Honor is trying to bring race into the picture, and race has been thrown out. I submit that race
was... Race hasn't been thrown out.
Well, by the trial judge, it was. I would submit that
the
race...
claim has been thrown out, but not the false arrest and...
There's nothing. The person's race was used as an identifier to assist the police officers in locating this individual. The individual.
That's your view. I'm just saying this qualified immunity appeal depends on there being no issues of fact, and the district judge looked at this and assessed it as a case where there were issues of fact on whether immunity would apply, and actually, of course, it turns into immunity from judgment once the trial's taken place. We all understand that. The Supreme Court understands that in Johnson against Jones. But sometimes these things can't be resolved in the first instance.
Well, first I would submit that Your Honor has jurisdiction. Now, maybe you've already decided the case, or maybe those facts indicate that the result...
We don't have jurisdiction if we think there are disputed issues of fact.
We're asking Your Honor to accept everything she says. That's what we're asking in this case, where she's... The statute specifically allows us to detain the person. A person who's validly stopped under Terry can be questioned, asked why they're there, and under 107-14, at the scene, or in the vicinity of the stop, not two blocks away, not three blocks away, in the vicinity of the stop, we can ask them for identification. She did not have any identification, so we asked for the next best thing. Give us your date of birth.
She has no identification. She has her official ComEd card.
She has no name and address. She did not give us an address. And under the statute, we're entitled to name and address, and I submit that we're not required to accept an ID that can be easily faked, that can be printed off on a color printer at home with a picture on it.
She wasn't asking you to do that. She offers the supervisor. You could have made a separate call to ComEd.
After we
meter reader today.
After we asked for her date of birth, when she said, why do you need it? She started walking away.
She stands there and makes a phone call, according to what the district judge said.
Well, if you look at the record, Your Honor, what clearly happens if you look
Johnson
at pages...
Johnson walked a few feet away and proceeded to make a phone call.
I would submit you look at pages 41 through 43 of her deposition, and that's not what she said. That may be what he identified, but that's not what she testified to in her deposition. She said he handed Clark handed back her IDs, and then she started to walk away. And he said, "Why? What's the hurry?"
Okay.
I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, sure. I'll give you a minute afterwards. Mr. Fox. So, Mr. Fox, is the record as incomplete as Mr. Koenig says it is?
No. To the contrary, it's extraordinarily complete. Everything that my client did is in the record. Everything that the officers did is in the record. As Your Honor stated, she moved a few feet away. She made a telephone call. This is in the transcript. But then when Officer Kaminsky comes, the second officer comes, and by the way, he transmits over the radio 25 seconds after the first officer transmits over the radio. He says, "I verify," and this is in the transcript of the tape recording, I verified with a neighbor. It's a ComEd worker reading meters. This is in the transcript of the radio dispatch. He then goes there. According to Kaminsky himself, he sees Ms. Jones standing roughly 3 feet from Officer Clark on the telephone. She's calling her supervisor. In fact, we've got all the tape recordings of the calls with the supervisor because they taped them over at ComEd. And really, I would just urge the court, and I said so in my papers, to look at there's a video in the booking area of where they took her, and you can see how my client looks. She's a diminutive 5 foot tall, as non-threatening as you can get, African-American lady wearing a ComEd uniform, and you can see her being screamed at and crying, screamed at by Sergeant Kaminsky because he wasn't happy with something that she said out in the scene, and he snatches her hat off her head and starts screaming at her in the room. And that's what you see in the video. But the video, the usefulness of it for our purposes is you can see what she's wearing, see what she looks like. She's as non-threatening as they come.
So what about the statement that she volunteers or she indicates that her driver's license is in the car, and Mr. Koenig also said that a look at the record suggests that she never volunteers to let them see the license.
She never refuses.
She doesn't refuse, but she doesn't say, "Why don't you come with me and I'll get my license"?
I don't think she says those words verbatim. She says she's questioned about her ID. She says, my driver's license in my vehicle. My vehicle's a few blocks away. They don't say to her, "Let's go get your license. Let's go see, look at your license." She then shows them her two ComEd IDs, which are on a retractable string, which you might expect a ComEd worker to have. The two IDs are on a retractable string attached to her waist. She retracts them. She shows them to the officer. He puts them in her hand. He disputes what she shows her in the transcript, but I guess they're going along with her story for this. She shows him her two IDs, which she has. And then after that, she explains to him why she has the binoculars, because she says some yards are fenced and some people have dogs, and sometimes she has to read the meters from a distance because of those reasons. That's what she explains to the officer. She then gets worried he's bothering her. She's really worried about her job. "I got to get on with my job." She moves a few feet away to call her, literally 3 feet away, according to all the testimony, to call her supervisor. And then this Kaminsky, the sergeant, comes in, and he, according to my client, starts screaming at her because she hasn't given all the information. The only information she hasn't given up to that point of time is her date of birth. That's the record in a nutshell. He gets mad. It's a power trip. He arrests her for that. There is no other reason that he arrests her other than the fact they don't even put in their brief why they arrested her in their opening brief, because it's so murky and confusing. So they never even say it in their opening brief. I'd also like to point out to the court a couple things. One, she was not asked for her address. Mr. Koenig says she was asked under the statute, the identified statute, says you have to give your name and address. She didn't give her address. She was not asked for her address. She said she worked for, but she did say she worked for ComEd, of course. Also, I wanted to point out to the court, there is a recent case that I found that came out after my brief called Gentry versus Sevier. It's a 2010 WL 668901. And in that case, the officers had a call that an African-American fellow in camouflage pants at 2:30 in the morning was pushing a wheelbarrow in a residential neighborhood, and that was found not enough to be reasonable suspicion. Now, that is That is information that is certainly no less egregious. And as Your Honor pointed out, there's nothing wrong with making telephone taking pictures. From that case alone, you can deduce that what my client did was lawful. There was nothing suspicious about it. And within moments of the officer seeing her, he admits he saw her ComEd uniform. He admits he sees it says ComEd. They point to not a single fact in the entire transcripts and the briefing that you can look at. You will not hear a single fact that indicates there's some reason to be suspicious. Truly.
Does he ever testify, though, that he thought that it was a phony ComEd uniform, or that, you know, he was afraid she was casing the neighborhood for purposes of later theft, or
not even a hint of that, Judge. And in fact, the question was blatantly asked during deposition. Within a minute after you got there, were you suspicious about anything? His answer was no. That's from Officer Clark. Sergeant Kuminski, I quoted it in my brief. That was his answer, no. The defense had a problem with that because they said, well, that's getting into the subjective beliefs of the officers, and you can't look at the subjective beliefs, but that's not getting into the subjective beliefs. He's objectively saying, I have no facts indicating a reason to be suspicious. That's his testimony. When Sergeant Kuminski, the sergeant, was asked the same question, he says, well, no, but I don't know what I had at that point. So he doesn't point to a single fact. Truly, you could ask them, tell me a single fact that would indicate some suspicion. They don't say that the IDs looked worn or somehow odd in any sense. They don't say her uniform looked odd in any sense. They really do not point to a single fact. And you can scour the record. They did this after the fact affidavit, after discovery affidavit, where they said in the affidavit, well, he had never seen a ComEd ID before, and he'd never seen a person with binoculars before. But during the course of his deposition testimony, he said nothing to be suspicious of. So the affidavit adds nothing and, in fact, contradicts what he said in his deposition, because if you want to take the inference that he gives, and we're not supposed to take inferences in their favor, but if you want to, it contradicts the fact that he said we weren't suspicious about anything. And again, I think Your Honors have identified the problem. There's many facts in conflict. Another big one, for example, in their opening brief, they said that there was obstruction because when Sergeant Kuminski got there, her back was to the. Her back was to Officer Clark when Sergeant Kuminski arrived. Well, that happens to be a disputed fact, as we pointed out, because Ms. Jones testified her back wasn't to him. So then we pointed out in our opposition brief, they backed off that statement in the reply brief and tried to argue a different formulation for obstruction of justice. And it just doesn't. There just is no obstruction. There is nothing other than giving her date of birth, which she did not do. She could not have done anything more for these officers. That's just the bottom line. She was in uniform. There was a call that said a construction worker was taking pictures. She had no camera. They ascertained this within seconds of arriving. She was in uniform. She had ComEd IDs. She said, my driver's license is in my truck. My truck is nearby. You can talk to my supervisor. I'm calling my supervisor. She wanted to move on with her work because she was scared. She said, I have 500 meters to read that day. She was worried about her job. And they were mad, and this was a power trip by Sergeant Kuminski, so he decides to arrest her because she didn't answer the last question that was asked, what's your birthday? And with that, unless the court has any further questions, I have nothing further.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
You may have a minute, Mr. Koenig.
Thank you, Your Honor. If the officer said, yes, I thought she was committing a crime, is that relevant or probative to the issue of whether or not the stop was justified? No. Devin Peck says we don't look to the subjective state. Wren says we don't look to the subjective beliefs of the officer. So whether he didn't think she was committing a crime or he did is unimportant. We look at the reasonable police officer. I would invite the court to look to pages 37 through 51 of the plaintiff's deposition. Those are the facts upon which we rely. We had a witness who said, I initially thought this was a ComEd worker, but when she didn't read my meter, I became suspicious. Those were the facts that the officers possessed at the time they stopped. And they just simply concluded that this may not be a ComEd worker. This may be somebody posing as a ComEd worker. This is not somebody taking pictures for Google. Pictures for Google are taken from an airplane, not from somebody walking through the neighborhood, acting suspiciously. Your Honors decide whether or not it's reasonable suspicion for somebody to conclude that, hey, I don't know that ComEd workers read meters by using binoculars. as opposed to walking through backyards as they do in my neighborhood. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll take the case under advisement.